Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. Who, other than one who is not a human being, can exist in this world and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the personality of Godhead's activities, which by itself can deliver one from all material pangs? Repeat after me. Who, other than one who is not a human being, can exist in this world and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the personality of Godhead's activities, which by itself can deliver one from all material pangs? Purport. The narration of the activities of the personality of Godhead is like a constant flow of nectar. No one can refuse to drink such nectar except one who is not a human being. Devotional service to the Lord is the highest goal of life for every human being, and such devotional service begins by hearing about the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. Only an animal or a man who is almost an animal in behavior can refuse to take an interest in hearing the transcendental message of the Lord. There are many books of stories and histories in the world, but except for the histories or narrations on the topics of the personality of Godhead, none are capable of diminishing the burden of material pangs. Therefore, one who is serious about eliminating material existence must chant and hear of the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. Otherwise, one must be compared to the non-human. Om Bhagyanita Manandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Taitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Namahom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Sunavadi Pasyacha Deshitarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasti Gaurabhakta Vinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hari, Hari, Hari Rama, Hari Rama, 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 Hari, Hari. Can someone help me put this in frame? Oh, I got it. Yeah, actually this can go. So, thank you very much for inviting me to come to Bhaktivedanta Manor and give Srimad Bhagavatam class. I'm actually not here that much. Before I get into today's class, though, there's two announcements, actually. Big news. I don't know if you heard the big news of Narendra Modi giving Vladimir Putin Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Did you hear about that? Big news. This is big news. This will be a topic of discussion for quite some time, I believe. It's very important on the world stage what it means symbolically in so many ways. And of course, the big news everyone knows about from last week of Sevenbury Place. But what a lot of devotees don't know is that actually Sevenbury Place is the birthplace not only of Radha Lalaneshwara, but of Radha Gokulananda. Do you know the history? Yeah, actually it was between 72 and 73, Radha Gokulananda were sent from India. They were there first at a Delhi Pandal that Prabhupada spoke at, and Prabhupada said, send them to London. Okay, the only temple in London at that time was Sevenbury Place. So Radha Gokulananda spent about a year in the Pujari room of Radha Lalaneshwara. So we can honestly say that Sevenbury Place is not only important to the Soho Temple, but important to the manor too. It's important to understand that sequential history and how it will affect all of the preaching here in London. So I wanted to make that point. Some of the devotees at the Soho Temple, they haven't yet quite understand that aspect, that it's actually the birthplace also of Radha Gokulananda. And of course now there's also a drive for, you got to pay for the place, so different people are given the opportunity to contribute to that, which is extends into the manor and the congregation here. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say before class. Now, getting into the class, we've just been reading from the third canto for weeks now, the creation and appearance of Lord Varaha. You've all heard the story many times. Maitreya Rishi is narrating this universal history, the Vidura, and it all concerns the appearance of Lord Varaha as a divine boar incarnation. Very amazing pastime. The earth had fallen into the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean. Lord Brahma felt helpless, but he prayed for the Lord's intervention. And what happened? Out of the nostril of Lord Brahma came a tiny little boar that grew and grew and grew and grew. Lord Varaha. Seemingly incomprehensible, actually, how that can happen, but when it comes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nothing's the limit. Anything is possible. So, after describing this whole pastime of the Lord's entrance and the worship by the sages and the devotees, and Maitreya is expressing a strong reflection here in this verse, how can any sane human not be attracted to such divine narrations? Hearing about Krishna's activities is the ultimate purpose of human life. And we've heard these things before. Only human life gives the unique chance to inquire into God, to God realization, self-realization. And so devotional service begins, as we all know, with Shravanam. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam Archanam Vandanam Darshanam Sakyam Atmani Vedanamam. So Shravanam, right there at the very beginning. Okay, so what's being conveyed in this purport, and this verse in purport, is a simple message, but it's a very strong message that someone who's actually not a human being rejects to listen to this nectar. This is actually strong language that Prabhupada uses. Purport says, only an animal or one acting like an animal has no interest in self-realization. Real humanity equals the capacity for transcendence or God realization. So, within this Kali Yuga, things are very difficult. It's basically filled up with dvipada pashus, two-legged animals. Now, we can't be so comfortable thinking, oh, I'm not a dvipada pashu, until we're actually on that platform of drinking in the nectar of Krishna's pastimes and absorbing ourselves in Krishna consciousness. To some degree, we're also dvipada pashus. Prabhupada, though, is very specifically calling them not even humans. They're calling them animals. So we should not be condescending to the animals of Kali Yuga. the Dvipadapashus, but we should be compassionate and merciful. We can direct them, especially now during the Prabhupada Marathon, to Prabhupada's books, encourage them to learn the science of God, self-realization. Some will be attractive, but most actually will not, because this is the nature of the age we live in. They look like they're very happy and sophisticated and educated and in their ways of life, but actually it's no better than an animal's. So what's the distinguishing factor here is Krishna Katha. So here, this Krishna Katha is the nectar, it's the amrita, just as we have charanamrita, the nectar we drink every morning that's used from the bathing water of the lotus feet of the Lord. So this nectar, this amrita, Prabhupada describes it as liquid nectar coming into the ears, and is actually the cure for all kinds of suffering. Well, it's not going to cure necessarily the material body, but it'll cure our misery of our existence within this material world. How? Because it's awakening our devotion. So today, I'm not going to go over this pastime so much, but I did want to discuss a little other kind of amrita, this nectar of Krishna Katha. And it has to do with what happened yesterday. Does anyone know what happened yesterday? Yeah, what else? No one knows. Vastraharana Leela. Very specific Leela in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. It's the culmination of a one month vow of rut taken by the gopis. So every year, it's basically the same thing. We devotees come together and we celebrate Kartik month, the month of Kartik. We sing Damodarastakam. Oh, this is the month of Radharani. We take special vows. We think of especially Radharani. Okay, then what happens after Kartik ends? There's another month. What's the name of that month? Margashirsha. It's the month of Margashirsha. And Margashirsha, it's right there in Bhagavad Gita, and Bhagavad Gita 10:35. The verses of the hymns in the Sama Veda, I am the Brihatsama, and of poetry, I am the Gayatri, of months, I am Marga Shirsha, November, December, and of seasons, I am flower-bearing sayings, spring. So Krishna is saying here in Bhagavad Gita, after Radharani's month, Kartik, is Marga Shirsha, that's his month. You think of it that way? This is Radha and Krishna, Kartik, Marga Shirsha, Radha, Krishna. So in that purport to Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada states that the month of November-December is considered the best of all months because in India, grains are collected from the fields at this time and the people become very happy. Okay, that's nice. This is a straightforward, culturally acceptable explanation. It's consistent with Prabhupada's mission to present Bhagavad Gita as it is, without any premature introduction to intimate Vrajalilas. Well, today we're going to get into another layer of understanding Margashirsha, because we're going to go over this pastime. But what did the gopis do? So the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, the lineage coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we actually can recognize layers upon layers of meaning. So even though Prabhupada doesn't give this meaning in Bhagavad Gita, that Margashirsha, yes, it's Krishna's month, I'm going to layer on another meaning that's there in the works of Jiva Goswami, specifically. So the Kartik month, it's very rasika. It's about Vrajalila. And actually, Margashirsha is too. It's Krishna's month. It couldn't be any less than Vraja Bhakti. But Prabhupada, he avoided in his Bhagavad Gita purport saying anything that would go into these Vraja Leela topics, because it's Bhagavad Gita, it's introduction. So what happened in the month of Margashirsha? Someone can say something? The gopis did what? Ah, who's Katyayani? She's Durga? Didn't the gopis not get the message from Bhagavad Gita not to worship the demigods? What happened? Oh, Yoga Maya. Oh, very good. Thank you very much, Adiguru. Yes. There is a distinction when it comes to Katyayani, Durga. The gopis were worshipping Durga. Yes, but Prabhupada explains in Krishna book and in other places, their worship of Durga was not like the mundane worship of Durga that goes on in the world today. That worship of Durga is the worship of Mahamaya. But the gopis' worship of Katyayani is the worship of Yoga Maya. So what's this Mahamaya, Yoga Maya dichotomy? Actually, Durga, I just have written a recent article in Back to Godhead, the name of the article, Mahamaya or Yoga Maya, the confusion of illusion. Because this personality, Durga, she's actually kind of got a split personality. And the personalities are 180 degrees opposite each other. So the gopis were not worshiping Maya Devi, they were worshiping Yoga Maya. Okay, so I don't want to get into a whole explanation of this. There's a lot that I want to cover today, but where is Yoga Maya in our worship? Can anyone say? How do we worship Yoga Maya? Yes? Very good, Lady Subhadra. So not here, but at the Soho Temple, you have Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. And actually, Jagannath deities were the very first deities within the Hare Krishna movement in San Francisco, 1967, right just before the very famous summer. What was that summer called in San Francisco? Ah, very good. You know your history. So, in the Summer of Love came in Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, and the devotees were asking Prabhupada, when he's called Swami, oh, Swamiji, can you tell us about Subhadra? And so Prabhupada would explain, yes, Subhadra is Krishna's sister, but we don't worship her. She's Durga, but we don't worship her as Mahamaya. We worship her as Yogamaya. So Prabhupada gave a wonderful example that illustrates this to those early devotees, and it's also there in his purports. This Durga, this Shakti energy, manifestation, ultimately is coming from Radharani, from Ramadevi. In the spiritual world, there's the Vaikuntha planets, Lakshmi Narayan manifestation. So one of the Lakshmi manifestations is not Rama Devi, Rama Devi. And from Rama Devi actually comes Durga. And then Prabhupada explains that Durga Devi, she controls actually the entire material world. She is the material world. She is that material energy. But then Prabhupada gives an analogy to help us understand this Yoga Maya, Mahamaya, Yoga Maya dichotomy. And the analogy is one of electricity. So with one electrical outlet, you can plug in your electrical frying pan and you can cook up a nice sabji, very nice. With that same electrical outlet, then you can plug in your refrigerator, freezer, take that hot sabji and cool it down. So it's the same energy, but opposite effects. One utilization of the energy cooks, heats. The other utilization of the energy cools down or can even freeze. So this is the nature of Subhadra. This is what was happening there in this Marga Shirsha month. The gopis had taken a very strict vow. Now, we're not advised, actually, in our tradition to follow in the footsteps of the gopis in this way, necessarily. Especially if you really understand the nature of this vow. It was really serious and very difficult. But we are advised to take shelter of Subhadra Devi. She is that same yoga maya energy. So sometimes devotees, they hear this and they get a little confused. Wait a second, I thought we don't worship demigods in the Hare Krishna movement, but actually we do, but in the right way. Just as also Hanumanji is on the altar here. Hanumanji is an expansion of Rudra, Shiva, but in his connection to the Supreme Lord, Lord Ram. Similarly, Subhadra is not worshipped independently, but in her connection to her brothers, Krishna and Balaram. Ultimately, Subhadra also connects us to Radha and Krishna. So, this is important to hold all this information there, that we can understand Marga Shirsha as a month, that it brings about external abundance for society. That's why in Krishna, Prabhupada is elaborating in his Bhagavad Gita purport, that it's bringing about this abundance on an external level for society, but on an internal level, it's also bringing about abundance for the devotees' hearts. Because here, the gopis, what are they praying for? What's their desire? Krishna, our beloved Krishna. They want to marry Krishna. Now, not that we want to necessarily marry Krishna, but we want to become Krishna's beloved. This is our desire, actually, in Krishna Bhakti. So this month, Marga Shirsha, so important. It's Krishna's month. So I'm going to try and unpack some of this a little more. The vow of the unmarried gopis girls was quite austere. They, every morning, would go to the Jamuna River, and singing the glories of Krishna, they would take their bath. But it was icy, cold Jamuna River. Not easy. After that, what did they do? They came out, and they, on the banks of the Jamuna, Prabhupada explains, they formed a deity out of sand. So, you know, we have beautiful deities out of marble and metal. There's a deity can actually be made out of sand. So every day, the gopis would make a beautiful deity out of sand, a bas-relief image of Durga Devi, do their puja, and then that image would be pushed back into the sandbanks. So every day, they'd have to make a new deity. And not only doing the puja and offerings and everything nice as in deity worship, the part of the vow that was really the most difficult, they took a vow of eating once a day. And what did they eat? Yes. Unspiced khichdi, no ghee, no butter, no salt, no vegetables. You can eat it, you can subsist on it, but who wants to eat like that once a day? No snacking. Nothing nice to satisfy the palate. So it's not advised that we follow this example of the gopis, but we should understand that the gopis were so austere. And that's why actually in ISKCON sannyasis, they chant a mantra that's actually glorifying the gopis because they're the most austere. What sannyasi in ISKCON can actually eat like this once a day, rice, dal, mush, no salt, no nothing? Maybe, but it's not advised that we follow this. But the idea is, Yes, the gopis are worshiping Durga, Katyayani. We can also worship Durga. Go to the Soho temple. She's there. There's so many hundreds of temples now where Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra have manifest. They've been there. Durga Devi has been in the Hare Krishna movement since day one, practically, 1967. So I'm going to add another layer of meaning to this Katyayani Vrat. It's coming from Jiva Goswami's Lagu Vaishnava Toshani. Okay? So sometimes people misunderstand that Krishna, they think of him as a very immoral, actually a lusty fellow. What's going on? Why? Because of this Vastaharana Leela. This Vastaharana Leela happened yesterday. It's on our calendar. We don't necessarily observe it. I'm talking about it today because in our verse today, we're talking about how we can elevate ourselves to the human life by drinking in the nectar of Krishna Katha. So here's one very difficult pastime sometimes to explain. How this rascal Krishna, what happens at the end of the Katyayani Vrat, so the gopis are doing their Vrat for 1 month. At the end of the month, that was yesterday, here comes Krishna. He goes to the private place where all the young ladies are bathing, the gopis. He gathers up their clothing and he goes where? He goes up into a kadamba tree. We know that, anyway, the pastime is there in Krishna book. Krishna forces the gopis to come out of the cold water, but they have no clothes on. So mundane people will look at this pastime and say, well, this is horrible. Krishna is exploiting these poor girls. This is abominable. How can you tolerate this? What to say of worshiping this character? Okay, but this is from a material perspective. Okay, now we're going to get into the Vraja Leela understanding. What's really going on in this pastime? So Jiva Goswami, he's looking at this Krishna stealing of the clothes as a deliberate mystical kind of a device, a way to bring about the inner consequence of the gopis' vow. The gopis were vowing in this way, worshiping Katyayani. They wanted to get Krishna as their husband. So Krishna forced it upon them. Why? A young woman cannot be seen naked unless other than one's husband. This is normal human society, life. So this Jai Shishirada Gokulanda Ki Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanji Ki Jai. So this pastime, it requires, we have to broaden our understanding. Just like, okay, Radha Gokulananda here, Radha and Krishna. The gopis, first of all, are all expansions of Radha Rani. We have to always keep that in mind. So this Vastaharana Leela is actually Radha and Krishna expansion. The gopis are not separate from Radharani. They are Radharani in different varieties of personalities and manifestations. Just as Krishna expands himself in different ways, Radharani as well. So this Vastaharana Leela is actually all about Radha and Krishna. Krishna is not fooling around with some unmarried ladies. He's basically exchanging in loving affairs with Radharani in the form of varieties of gopis. So by putting the gopis in the position of standing in front of him with no external coverings, it's also symbolic. It's showing their willingness to come before Krishna without any pretense. Complete freedom from ahankar, a false ego. They're saying, yes, we are yours, Krishna. We don't mind coming before you. In the beginning, they tried to cover themselves. Then what did Krishna do, that rascal Krishna? He tells them, you've offended Varuna. Great offense. You're bathing in the river naked. This is an offense. Wasn't it an offense? No. But the gopis said, oh, we've offended Varuna? Yes, you're right. So how do we overcome that offense? Krishna said, okay, you have to bow down with your hands above your head and offer your obeisances to Varuna, further exposing themselves. But this is not to be taken as a mundane licentiousness or horrible activity on Krishna's part. This is part of the lila and symbolic of how the devotee in the presence of the beloved Krishna has to come before Krishna in full humility, full surrender, freedom from all sense of ego. Simply, the only desire is how to serve the Lord. So this is important, like I was saying, to keep in mind that all the gopis are actually just expansions of Radharani. This is also explained in Rupa Goswami's Ujjvala Nilamani. And ultimately, Krishna is fulfilling the desires of the gopis in this lila. So this Margashirsha, this is Krishna's month. Why? Because the gopis came before him in this full surrender, and this pastime of Radha and Krishna didn't culminate at that exact time in terms of Rasa Lila, but it was a precursor to what will be coming in months ahead. So Krishna is not lusty. Krishna is Atmaram. He's completely satisfied in himself. The Chaitanya Charitamrita gives a nice analogy. Atmendriya priti vancha tari bali kama, Krishnendriya priti icha dari prema nama. The desire to gratify one's own senses is kama, lust, but the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna is prema, love. So this is the nature of Radha Krishna love exchange. Radharani loves Krishna so much, she expands herself into the gopis to please Krishna. And ultimately, it culminates in Rasa Lila. Krishna loves Radharani so much, he expands himself in many forms to please the gopis. It's an exchange of love. There's no self-interest. There's actually no lust. And another place, this lust is compared to iron. Gold is compared to gold. So both are metals, but completely different properties and looked at in a different way. Say it again. What did I say? Love is compared to gold. Lust is compared to iron. I'm sorry, yes. So, Vastraharana Lila. Now, this then goes into, for us, this November, December is important because we're now being propelled into this lila of Sankirtan, Prabhupada Marathon. Now there's a connection. I want to go into this a little bit. If I have time here, I have a little bit of time. I'm going to be quoting a little bit from Vaisheshika's book on our family business, because he describes it in there. What is this connection of Lord Chaitanya with his Vraja Lila, the gopis, Radha and Krishna? And even here in the painting, this is not the only one. You have the whirl of the lotus, the thousand-petal lotus, Radha and Krishna. Off in the corner, though, is Lord Chaitanya. So this Vraja Lila and Navadvip Lila of Lord Chaitanya, they actually go together. So Vaisheshika writes, although the associates of Radharani do not accept any personal attention from Krishna, Radharani is so pleased with them that she arranges individual meetings between Krishna and the damsels of Raja. Indeed, Radharani tries to unite her associates with Krishna by many transcendental maneuvers, and she takes more pleasure in these meetings than in her own meetings with him. When Krishna sees that both Radharani and her associates are pleased by his association, he becomes more satisfied. So Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami states that in the Kali Yuga, Radha and Krishna, although externally two persons, appear as one, Eka Atmana. And of course this is the whole main thrust of the Chaitanya philosophy, Achincha, Beda, Abeda, Tattva. Radha and Krishna are one, but they're different, simultaneously, inconceivably. So, in the mood of Chaitanya, this is what we're following. This is what we're trying to absorb ourselves in when it comes to book distribution, Harinam as well. And that is this mood of Chaitanya. So there's a very nice painting also where in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the bottom part is the Sankirtan, and then the above part is the Vrajalila of Krishna and the gopis. So this is our mood. We're trying to understand what is this connection, what's going on here. again, from Vaisheshika's book, Srila Prabhupada showed this relationship between Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya's pastimes graphically by commissioning one of his artists to paint that first illustration. The work depicts Lord Chaitanya and his associates dancing in Sankirtan on the bottom half of the canvas, and Lord Krishna and the gopis in the rasa dance on the top half. When Lord Chaitanya comes to the material world, his associates from the spiritual world come with him to taste and distribute the fruits of pure love for Krishna. Now, I'm going to have to speed up a little bit so we can have time for questions. So, this mood of the gopis and Sankirtan, it's an esoteric principle, but we have to be able to apply it within ISKCON. So, Vaisheshika refers in his book on book distribution to the old days, 1974. Rameshwar Prabhu was in charge of the BBT in Sankirtan, and he was giving classes encouraging all the devotees, not just in Los Angeles. His classes were being distributed all over the movement, all over America. This is way before internet. We could do it easily. And some of his classes were, you know, creating somewhat of a controversy. So Rameshwar explains it this way. He said, I began to see that the Sankirtan devotees in direct contact with the storehouse, they were in direct contact with the storehouse of love of Godhead, that Lord Chaitanya had broken open 500 years ago, this storehouse of nectar. And the Sankirtan devotees were contacting that nectar through the grace of Prabhupada and Prabhupada's books. So Prabhupada had brought that same storehouse to the earth. The Sankirtan devotees were connected to Prabhupada. And therefore, that divine energy of Chaitanya, because Chaitanya is in the mood of Radharani, the Sankirtan devotees were ecstatic. So in his lectures at New Dwarka, Rameshwar would repeatedly refer to the service of book distribution as a tasteful arrangement for souls to be joined in loving service to Krishna, a service that follows the mood of the gopis of Vrindavan. Rameshwar recalls that his classes about Sankirtan were going out to all the temples to enliven the book distributors, but some devotees doubted his conclusions. So one Mataji, book distributor, her name is Nandulal Devi Dasi. She wrote to Prabhupada. She she said. They have this, actually, what she wrote, and then I'll give Prabhupada's reply so you understand this without my elaborating too much. So this is Nandalal's letter to Prabhupada. I have heard Rameshwar Prabhu in Los Angeles say that when we are performing Sankirtan, we are engaged in the Leela of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is the union of Radha and Krishna, and he explained that just as Radharani is even more anxious to arrange for the other gopis to meet with Krishna than she is for herself to meet Krishna, and that the other gopis are also always trying to think of ways in which to arrange meetings between Radha and Krishna, so when the devotees are going out and trying to engage the suffering conditioned souls, actually what we are doing is trying to arrange for some of her lost souls to meet with Krishna once again, and that this is the Leela of Lord Chaitanya. It's kind of a run-on sentence, but it's very nice. Then she asks, is this the proper understanding of Sankirtan? Prabhupada's reply came in June 1974. The explanation given by Rameshwar that Sankirtan is Lord Chaitanya's Leela, which he compares to the gopis trying to engage in Krishna's service, is the correct understanding. Now, it's interesting, nowhere does Prabhupada make this connection himself. Here he's making it indirectly by saying that these lectures given back in 1974, when book distribution was just taking off, it was very new. Here Prabhupada's saying, yes, this is actually the correct understanding. So the idea that Vaisheshika gives then in his book is, here this great opportunity is being given to young devotees who don't know much about anything, what to say of these confidential, intimate Vraja Leelas, but still, we should know on some level, not that the Sankirtan devotees are all gopis, no, not like that, but on some level, they're following in that mood of bringing the Dvipada Pashus, the fallen souls, to Krishna, and that this activity is so pleasing to Chaitanya, so pleasing to Radha Gokulananda, Radha and Krishna, and that this is the essence of how to get Radharani's mercy. We are not Bhajanandis, we're Goshtiyanandis, we're preachers. We do bhajans, but we don't do it in separation from our main activity, which is to give the nectar of Krishna Katha to the fallen conditioned souls. So I've noticed I've run out of time. There's probably room for a few questions here. You're first. Yeah, go ahead.
Prabhu, yeah, it's a bit cold in here. Thank you for a fantastic, wonderful class. Just a quick question. I heard that when Krishna stole the younger gopis' clothes, news spread around, and Radharani and her friends came to see. Have you heard that?
Perhaps there's all kinds of expansions of the Leela given by the Goswamis. I have not heard that one. But in the Bhagavatam, I don't think it's there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Hare Krishna, thank you for a very clear presentation. I greatly appreciate that. One question I have regarding demigod worship. In the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada states that devotees reject the ghastly and horrible forms of the demigods and only worship the all blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Could you please explain what he means by the ghastly and horrible forms of the demigods?
Perhaps he's referring to Kali, kind of ghastly. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Okay, but Kali is also Durga, but in a fierce form. So we also have the pastime in the fifth canto of Jad Bharat was brought before the deity of Kali by the dacoits, and they were getting ready to sacrifice him. What happened? Kali came out of the deity, kind of similar to Nrisingadev coming out of the pillar. Kali came out of the deity form And you have that wonderful BBT artwork. You know what I'm talking about, where Kali's there with her associates, and they're tossing around the heads because the heads got severed, and they're drinking the blood. So it's like, you know, playing soccer with the heads and drinking the blood. It's kind of ghastly. But Kali came to protect the devotee of Vishnu. That's her. She's Durga. She's Vaishnavi. Just like we have the understanding of Lord Shiva, the topmost Vaishnava, Durga is the topmost Vaishnavi. So Durga, Kali, when properly understood in their relationship to Krishna and Krishna Bhakti, they are our gurus. They teach us how to advance in Krishna Bhakti. Of course, the opposite is, if they're approached with not in the relationship of understanding Krishna Bhakti, they will keep you in the material world. That's the Mahamaya, keeping you in the material world. So there's that Mahamaya, Yogamaya, is something we have to understand. It's there in all aspects of the demigods. Even Saraswati, she has a negative side, she has a positive side. Shiva has a negative side, he has a positive side, as Gopeshwar Mahadev. Lord Chaitanya worshipped Lord Shiva in Varanasi, Prabhupada says, on a regular basis. So we have to understand how to understand that relationship. It's not that we reject the demigods completely. We integrate them into our Krishna consciousness with proper understanding how they are devotees of Krishna, not only just devotees, but supreme devotees. And they can be petitioned in a correct way. Now, we don't necessarily do that. It's not the way ISKCON is set up. But again, Lord Shiva is on the altar here in the form of Hanuman. Durga is on the altar at Soho Temple in the form of Subhadra. So in one sense, we do. With knowledge, not like the Hindu culture, which is based on Panchopasana, which is Mayavad based. Does that help explain a little bit? Or, okay. Any other questions, comments? Anyone want to discuss this further? Everyone's more interested in prasadam. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
One devotee was asking about the tattva of Lord Shiva. Is he Vishnu, or is he a demigod, a jiva? Could you? I know that you're quite learned about this subject.
It is a big topic, but briefly. Shiva is a separate tattva. He's not Vishnu tattva, he's not jiva tattva, he's Shiva tattva. And even within Shiva tattva, there are categories of tattvas, such as Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya is Sada Shiva, right? But wait a second, I thought Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu. So which one is he? Is he Vishnu? Sada Shiva, as a subcategory of Shiva Tattva, is Vishnu Tattva. It's a little difficult to understand. That Sada Shiva is the original Shiva in the spiritual world. From that original Shiva, all Rudras, Shambhus, Shivas expand. But that original Shiva is actually Vishnu Tattva. So when we say Sada Shiva, as in Advaita Acharya, that's also Vishnu Tattva. So even though the word Shiva is there, it's confusing. It is confusing. It gets further confusing, if I want to add a little more confusion to my trying to clarify it. So, I wrote an article in Bhaktivedanta on Gopeshwar Mahadev, Lord Shiva in Vrindavan. And I was writing that article for Bhaktivedanta, trying to be very conscious that I'm writing for congregational level comprehension. So I couldn't get into all of the difficult subject matters. And I call the article The Enigma of Gopeshwar Mahadev. It's available. You can type it into your web browser. It comes up. But actually, there's many levels of enigmas of Gopeshwar Mahadev. So one of the enigmas is the Vrajavasis and the Goswamis, they understood that aspect of Lord Shiva is also Sada Shiva. on the appearance day of Advaita Acharya in Vrindavan, where do they go? To the Advaita Acharya temple, Panchatattva? No, there's no Panchatattva temple. The Vrajavasis honor and worship Advaita Acharya at Gopeshwara Mahadev, because that Gopeshwara Mahadev is that same Sadashiva. Now it's getting confusing, I know. It's complicated. But Shiva Tattva and Vishnu Tattva are very closely interrelated. Of course, the analogy in Brahma Sangita, the milk is Vishnu, the yogurt or the curd is Shiva. In one sense, they're the same. In another sense, they're different. You cannot take the yogurt and turn it back into milk. So it's like that. But yes, the point is, when it comes especially to Shiva, we cannot tell people, when we're preaching to people, Krishna's good, Shiva's bad. No, not at all. Shiva's the topmost devotee. And we can honor and worship Shiva accordingly. Especially when it comes to Gopeshwara, yeah.
And the glance of Mahavishnu.
Yes.
But what exactly
Yeah, again, it's complicated. That glance of Mahavishnu is Sadashiva. In other words, Vishnu does not come in contact with the three modes of material nature. That comes through Shiva. That's the milk coming in contact with a yogurt culture transforms into yogurt. So the glance of Vishnu coming in contact with the three modes of material nature transforms into Shiva. So in that sense, Shiva, Shakti, they're mom and dad. Yeah. I hope I'm clarifying it because it's confusing. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu, for the class. You were mentioning how in Hindu culture there's this aspect of like how everything is one, and you said it comes from Samayavad system.
Panchopasana. This is coming from Shankaracharya, Panchopasana. So most of Hinduism, I would say about 80%, is still very much influenced by Shankara and this Panchopasana. Doesn't matter who you worship. You like Shiva? Worship Shiva. You like Durga? Worship. Hey, Ganesh, so cute. Let's worship Ganesh. He removes obstacles. Hanuman, Ram, Krishna, you know, Nisringa. Doesn't matter. You worship, you do your puja, it all goes to the same merging hodgepodge. Brahman. That's Mayavad. So we're not Mayavadis. We want to go to Krishna, Krishna Loka. You have to worship Krishna. Ultimately, you have to worship Radha and Krishna. Even some devotees may not be comfortable with this Vraja mood. They like Lakshmi Narayan, Sitaram, Lakshman. That Krishna, such a rascal, fooling around in Vraj. Well, at least Ramchandra, he had one wife. He was solid. He's no exploitation, right? So some people are more devoted to Ramchandra, that mood, Aishwarya Bhav, or Lakshmi Narayan, or Ram. So those places are also there in the spiritual world. The Hare Krishna movement, though, we do have a specialty, you could say, and focus on Radha and Krishna, because that's in our tradition. It's Lord Chaitanya is Radha and Krishna coming to give us pure prema bhakti, to take us back to Goloka Vrindavan. It's all there in the Hare Krishna mantra. The Hare Krishna movement is a very sophisticated philosophy, or it's as simple as three words, Hare Krishna and Rama. You can make it as complicated as you want, or you can just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So, and everything else in between. So of course, we always advise people, yes, Krishna is bhakti, it's a matter of the heart, but take the book. Have you read Bhagavatam? Have you read Chaitanya Charitamrita? What do you know of the philosophy? Because when you understand the philosophy, then the bhakti part comes together with the jnana and the philosophy. That's the melting of the mind and the heart. That's what we're after. Otherwise, the bhakti can be sentimental or even sahaja, these kind of influences. So we're always bringing the heart and the mind together, the bhakti and the jnana together. It's so even in understanding like this Mahamaya, Yogamaya dichotomy, this is sophisticated theology. There's no theology like this in the world. And most people are just basically in their Dvipada Pashu mentality, just don't have much brains to understand philosophy and theology. So we give them the Hare Krishna mantra, we give them Prabhupada's books, we give them prasadam, hope they become purified, hope for the best, you know, hope they can come and associate with the temple, the devotees, and it's our business to elevate them. Wherever they're at, we want to elevate them. Just like I'm doing service at Soho Temple in the reception area, everyone who comes through that door, I have to understand, somehow or other, this person is a devotee of Krishna. They've come to Krishna's temple. How can we help elevate them? So anyone who comes to the manor, they're not simply, you could say, mundane Hindus. Well, maybe they are, but we don't want to be condescending and think like that. I'm better than they are. We have to help elevate them with knowledge, with the books, especially now, Prabhupada Marathon. So, yeah, thank you very much. The Kartik, Margashirsha, leads right into Prabhupada Marathon time. So I hope we can all go out there with great enthusiasm to help deliver the fallen souls. But I think we should end here. Unless someone else has another question? Okay. If anyone wants to go for prasadam, they can.
Adding to what you said to Babu's question, in the Padma Purana it also states that a Brahmana can worship both Vishnu and Shiva. Is that in accordance to what you just said with the glands?
Padma Purana is there. It's a supplementary Purana. We base our philosophy, theology on Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. But in essence, yes, we can worship both Shiva and Vishnu, but with the right understanding. In other words, there's a right way and a wrong way. So if you do it in the wrong understanding, look out. That Mahamaya potency will work through Lord Shiva as well. And he'll keep you in the material world. Because you're approaching for material, mundane benefits, pleasures, something of this world. But if you approach Lord Shiva as the topmost Vaishnava, he'll act as the topmost Vaishnava guru. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. No, it just confused me that because Prabhupada is sometimes quoting the Padma Purana.
We can quote Padma Purana. I don't know exactly what you're referring to in your quote, but in essence, it's true. A Brahmana can worship both Shiva and Vishnu with the proper understanding. You have to put that qualifying, you know, aspect in there. Because if it's without proper understanding, there's going to be trouble in spiritual life. You'll think Shiva and Vishnu are one, or the ultimate goal is impersonal Brahman, or what. So many issues can be there. And that's what basically goes on within the Hindu world, is a lot of misunderstanding. So Prabhupada came to train us up to become Brahmins so that we can educate all levels of society what the actual essence of Sanatana Dharma is, Padma Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, everything. And now we have Narendra Modi giving Putin Bhagavad Gita. This is a big deal. This is going to start a lot of conversation, I think. Very good for the devotees preaching. Thank you.
Thank you,
Krishna. Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sambhav Devindiki Jai. Hare Krishna.